John, the information so far has just been fascinating. It's just mind-boggling. And you talked about how we can look for signs from people who've crossed over, passed on, who are no longer with us in physical form. You talked about how certain people have the ability to sort of live between worlds and act as transmitters of information both ways. How can we ourselves get better and develop our skills at having more of a free-flowing conversation with people and entities on the other side?
That's a fascinating question because I think it'll be different for different people. Just like some people are born with the ability to play music, and others, like me, have no idea how to play anything on the piano or the guitar or wherever. Others, from the earliest of ages, seem to be talented in one way or the other. So it is with us today. Some people are a lot more sensitive to the vibrations from the other side, more so than other people who are not concerned with that. So I think one of the first things to do is, and in my case, I read a lot. I read over the years, not even from the time my wife passed away. I was always interested in things that seemed to be strange, stranger than science. And so even as a teenager, I read about other worlds and communications between them because it occurred to me that there is a common thread among all these things. And if conditions are right, I should be able to convey my thoughts because thoughts are not things. They're not physical things. They are a very fine vibration and they cannot be stopped by physical matter and they can go throughout the universe. Just like take a TV station, for example, of the old days when they used to broadcast through those antennas. We might think after the broadcast was finished, that was the end of the show. But those waves traveled and traveled and traveled, and there are reports from different parts of the world that 10 or 20 or 30 years later, somebody tunes in a television and there's a ghost of an image from that show. Where is it? It just travels. It's just energy. It just keeps going on, and who knows where they are? We talk about light years. We look at as something of the solar system, not solar system. That's too close. We look at something in the universe, the night sky, the Milky Way, and some of those stars we are seeing don't exist anymore. They blew up thousands of years ago, but the light from them is just reaching us. So using those as theories with my knowledge and science, I thought we should be able to tune in, so to say, to different vibrations. And so I had a big head start and I read everything I could. And what came out of that? I believe what I'm talking about. I believe it's possible. So I think the first thing one has to do is to know that this is possible. If you start by thinking, well, that's a lot of nonsense, as some people have told me, they try to convince me it's my imagination and they try to say, no, that couldn't have happened until I gave them one or two practical ideas, and they still wouldn't believe it. I told them some things that were of tremendous help, which I'll get to one of those shortly, and they still wouldn't believe that this is possible. So if someone who is listening to this right now thinks that, yeah, that's okay for John. He trained himself. He's so special. He's this, he's that, and whatnot, so he could do this. And some of the people he knows, weird or not, could do this too. But me, I'm just an ordinary person, and I can't ever do that. And you ask that person, why can't you ever do that? Well, I really don't think it's possible. See, what occurs at that point, there is like a door closes. If you don't think it's possible, it's not going to happen for you. It blocks it all out. You cannot get to it. It might try to come to you in dreams, but even that you won't believe. So the first thing you have to do is to look at it and say, read up about it, check it out. And you might say, this is really possible. I wish I can do this. That's the first step. And then you go about training yourself to do this. You might say, okay, how do you do that? Well, it's like trying to explain something in 10, 20 minutes that might take a few days to explain. But the first thing you do is you start sitting quietly and you start observing. What am I hearing? What am I feeling? What am I seeing? How many times when I'm thinking of my wife, I see the clock strikes, or not strikes, at these digital things that say 7:11. And I say, oh, I'm not alone. She isn't gone forever. Another time I might see just for no reason, look at the clock, and it says 8:14, her birthday, August 14. So you have to start noticing these things. One good thing that I tell people to do when they're training themselves to do this, look at license plates. When you're driving by, of course, please do keep your eyes on the road, but glance every now and then at what a license plate says and look at the letters. See what they mean to you. At first, they will be probably meaningless, but later on, it would be like you want to... Let me show you how practical it becomes, because this is the same method you use for communications. It is also the method you use to guide you on choosing the right direction to go. Take, for example, I was offered a job in California and one in New York. I like to use this example a lot, and I couldn't decide which one to take. I'm driving along the highway, and I look up, and there is this billboard, and it says, fly Delta to New York. Oh, okay, nice. I don't intend to go to New York for any reason. And as I keep going, a car with a New York license plates pass me by. New York license plates. Wonder what they're doing here in the deep south. And then let's say I get bored and I turn on the radio and the song comes on called New York, New York. What was the question I was asking myself? The question was, should I go to California, to LA, or should I go to New York? And I got three signs that most people would have missed: the billboard, the license plates on the car, and the song on the radio. That's how ordinary this whole thing is. There's no magic or mystery to it. It's just an ordinary thing. And so it is with listening for the voices beyond. I've heard the voice of my dad at times under great stress. Now, if you were to say, John, did you hear it through the telephone or on the speakers on the computer or in the room? And my answer is no. I just heard it inside of me as if he was saying, okay, son, sit down. Let's have a little talk. This isn't as bad as it seems. And I would look around. I'd say, oh, where did that come from? And I'd sit quietly, close my eyes, and it's like I'm being comforted. I'm being given some direction.
That is very well put, John. And I appreciate you pointing that out, that it's not so much a matter of getting educated about this as it is just tuning into what's going on. In other words, I'm gaining the sense that we don't need to go through a course in learning how to communicate. We just need to start paying attention to what's going on, because this is happening all around us all the time. People and entities from beyond are constantly communicating with us. And if we would just pay attention and interpret those signs properly, we would understand what they're saying. Is that what you're saying?
This is exactly what I'm saying, because there is no need to go through all kinds of rituals unless you are comfortable with rituals. And I think rituals do have their place, but not for me to a great degree. But those who, what is it that Abraham Lincoln said? Something to the effect that for those who like that sort of thing, that's the sort of thing they'd like. So if rituals help, that's good. If you do what I do, which is sit very quietly, sometimes my feet on my desk, relax, breathe deeply, and just let my mind wander. After all, whose mind is it? It's mine. I wonder what it would find. This is how poets find their material at times. This is how people find information for books or solving problems and so forth. And I'm not talking about, I hate these words when people say talking to the dead. You can't talk to anything that's dead, because I don't think they're ever dead. We're never dead. How long will we live? Well, I could say possibly forever. How long is forever? It's a long, long, long time. Very long. So when someone leaves, it's like I did as a little boy, left the country I was born in to go away for a while. But one day I'd meet my friends again, just like many years later, my parents came over to live here, and they just lived a few blocks away from where I lived. So it was like, you see, You could compare that situation to a death situation. When someone dies, they appear to be gone. However, if there was such a strong bond between the two of you, let's say father-son like me and my dad, or husband-wife like me and my wife, or mother-son like my mother and I, there are times these days, and I don't tell people about this, because not because some of them would laugh and wonder about, that guy is weird. I really don't care. But I don't tell them because it's like trying to teach a cat to sing opera, although I'm sure there are people who have done that, who have taught a cat to do that. I have never met one, so I don't waste my time with that. But I know that the bond between those we love is so strong, if we choose to maintain it, that there are times and moments of great stress we can feel their presence. Throughout all the years since my dad has gone, every once in a while I see him in dreams, or I feel his presence, or I hear his voice as he says, "Sit down, son. Let's talk about this. And if you ever need me, let's meet again under the tamarind tree in the village by the river where we used to sit and talk." Now, am I imagining this? You know what? Even if I am, it has some very useful things to it, some very useful aspects, some life-affirming aspects. First of all, it's comforting. I feel that I never lost him. I wrote about him in that book, When You Can Walk on Water, Take the Boat, and how I met him again. Your audience is welcome to get a free copy of that book. I have the same situation with my mom, my grandma, with all these people who love me so dearly. After they died, you think that just disappeared? I don't think so. I don't think love just dies with the person dying. I think we're the ones who forget about it.
Very, very well put, as always, John. John, I want to change gears a little bit here, and I want to ask you what you think about Ouija boards. Now, Ouija boards have been popular for a long time. I remember as a kid, I had one, and they're actually manufactured by toy companies. I don't remember which toy companies manufacture them, but they're sold like Monopoly or chess or anything else. And you can get them. Kids get them sometimes. I remember as a kid, I get them. And you for those who aren't familiar with them, you usually have two or more people, and everybody puts a hand or two, their fingertips usually, on this little plastic or wooden thing that moves around. It's on these little felt pins that have felt in the bottom of them, and they move around this board, and the board has letters, and it says yes and no, and you ask a question, and presumably you're asking a question from beyond, from someone who's passed over, and it moves around, and it goes to A, B, or whatever, and actually spells things out, and they've been featured in movies and so forth. So I've used them. I know that there is movement in them, and they do spell things, but I want to know, what is that all about? Are we actually communicating with people who have crossed over, or entities in another realm, when we use Ouija boards?
The Ouija board is one of the methods of communicating, but not one of the efficient methods. I myself have used them way back when, and discovered I didn't need them. It's a way some people started communicating with those who have gone on, or with higher entities, if we want to call them that. For example, Jane Roberts, who wrote in the late 60s and 70s the Seth material, I think you might be familiar with that. Steve, Janie was a good friend of Richard Bach's. He flew across country for her to channel this entity called Seth. They started, Jane and her husband Rob, started using the Ouija board, and then got to a point where they didn't need that anymore. These are all devices. All devices. Take, for example, here's another example. I love to give examples. It's a device like a telephone line. The wired telephone that uses the phone that uses a landline, and then you get to another stage, and then you have your cell phone where you don't need a landline anymore. And then you get to a stage where you don't even need that. You just text You don't even need to talk. And then perhaps one day we'll get to the stage where we don't even need to text. We just think it and communicate through thoughts. And there are all kinds of movies made about that. But the Ouija board is one of those methods. I do have some warnings about the Ouija board. You see, there are a whole bunch of, let's assume that not all the entities, or these are people or spirits who have gone on, are really, really wonderful folks. Let's take, for example, if Uncle Seamus was a drunk and a horrible person when he was living and he didn't like anybody or anything, that he died and went on didn't make him immediately a saint. We tend to do that with people. They say, poor Uncle Seamus, he was such a good guy. But when he was alive, he said, oh, he was such a hard guy, a horrid person. I didn't like him at all. Well, Uncle Seamus is not going to change immediately. He will have to evolve there, wherever there, quote unquote, is, just as we have to evolve here into better human beings. So there are all kinds of entities who are waiting for a chance to communicate with us. So it's a good thing that the door isn't totally open. It's like, here again, Steve, it's an example. If you live in a very busy area of town, would you leave your door open for everybody to come in anytime they want to? For somebody to come and dump garbage in your living room or to rob you? No. But if you knew your friend, your good friend is coming, or your fiance or your wife or your son, you definitely will let them in. Well, the Ouija board doesn't seem to discriminate that way. It just permits them to come because it's one of the lower ways of doing it. And I know that it does work because I have used it quite a number of times in my younger days. I don't use it anymore because I have no need for it. And you do feel the thing moving in it and spelling words for you. Now, if the wrong person without the proper protection, and that's a whole other story of how to have the proper protection and whatnot. What I'm saying is, look, don't play with fire if you don't know what you're doing. But it's a fun, a game thing, and it is one way of doing it. But it's not one that I recommend because of inherent dangers of getting your head messed up by believing messages that may not be true and just some trickster trying to come across and have some fun with you.
Okay, I appreciate you explaining that. Now, I understand from what you just said that perhaps explaining and defining and teaching us about protection in a developed way, in an elaborate way, may take a little while. But I'm wondering if there's a quick and easy protection bit of advice you can share with us that would act as sort of a spam filter. Because from what I'm hearing, this sounds a lot like email. Like when you use the Ouija board, you may get a lot of email, so to speak, psychic email that you don't want.
I love that, Steve. I love it. That's exactly what it is. And you need your spam filter to catch it.
And how can we do that? Can you share with us something that would just, I mean, something practical that we can use that would be pretty easy for us to quote unquote install psychically that would protect us since we are potentially vulnerable to all of these positive and negative entities?
Okay, first of all, if you are what I call a more advanced spiritual being, that you understand these things, you know who you are, you trust the process of life, and you only think life-affirming thoughts, you're already halfway protected. But the other thing that I did, and a number of others did when we were just as much younger people testing these different systems out, is we would have a special prayer if you're a praying type, a kind of a asking for protection. Who are you asking? I have no idea, but there must be some force that's beneficial to us, and some people think of them as guides and teachers and angels or even God. And it is a good practice to say a little prayer. To this day, when I do a consultation, which is my intuitive consultation, I, about a minute before the person calls, I close my eyes, I breathe deeply, and I say, please help me to help this person by giving this person the information he/she needs to make their lives better. And that's it. Just a simple protection, or see yourself surrounded by a white light. That's only an imaginary thing. But imagine it anyway, because you don't know. We cannot prove yet that what we imagine isn't so. Just imagine that you're protected, and just go about it that way with a kind of divine honesty. And I think that would be 75 to 85% protection that you need.
That's very well put. Thank you so much for that, John. And as you mentioned, saying a prayer beforehand, I'm reminded of my days in 1990 to 1995. I was actually a preacher for the Church of Christ. I was, up there talking about the Bible and God and Christianity and so forth. And since leaving the church in 95, my views have changed a little bit. Of course, I still believe in God, but I'm wondering now, as people listen to this, perhaps older friends of mine and so forth, and others who are Christians, and they're hearing this, they're probably wondering, where does Christianity fit in? If the Bible says that after you die, you go to heaven or hell, and we're talking about entities essentially floating around and being available to contact us through Ouija boards and so forth, where does Christianity fit into all of this?
You know, I too, Steve, it's strange that Sagittarians do this. I too have a doctorate in divinity. I too preached in various churches. In fact, my wife was the daughter of a Lutheran minister. And I have studied and looked at Christianity and many other religions for decades. And I came to the conclusion that this whole thing has nothing to do with religion. Religion was a method of getting us to understand things a little bit better. There was a guy long ago by the name of Paul Harvey. I don't know if you remember Paul Harvey, but he used to be on radio. He had a great voice, and he used to tell, and that's the rest of the story. And he read a letter from God, which I thought was so beautiful. He said God wanted to communicate, and he just read a letter, and he says, now, here you are asking me which religion is the correct one. And God's answer was, frankly, I don't care. And I thought, that's just like what I would believe. But while we are growing up in a religion or in life, we go through first grade before we get to second. Some smart people will skip third and go to fourth. But there's a process we use. So Christianity never did have to fit in the way it is. We are the ones who interpret it this way. Because if we want to interpret what we read in the Bible, the Old or the New Testament, then what we would do today is, if somebody worked on the Sabbath day, that person would be stoned to death. And although there are different places in the world where these things still happen, and some of them are modern societies, it doesn't mean that that's how it should be, because our understanding of what's written there in all the books, whether it be Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, it doesn't matter. The main theme is love, because even in the Old Testament, the prophet said, he has showed thee, O man, what is right. And what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? I don't see anything there about, what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat and what you should talk about and what you should believe or not. When you go on to the New Testament, it was very simple. When the young lawyer asked Jesus which was the greatest commandment, and Jesus says, you're a student of the law. Don't you know? The greatest commandment is this: thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, blah, 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 on and so forth. And the second is like unto it: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. These are the only two major commandments in any age, any time, any religion. It's love. Do nice with your friends and enemies. Love your enemies. Notice love. I used to think that was crazy when I read that. I don't want to get into preaching here, Steve, but it's all tied together. Loving your enemies? Why would I want to do that? I want to slap him. Okay, but then I discovered later that you destroy your enemies by loving them. They become a friend or they disappear from your life. But anyway, this has no contradiction in my mind, what we were talking about with Christianity, because if you read the Bible very carefully, you will find, okay, Saul communicated with the prophet Samuel. You would find people communicating with one another, people seeking the advice of others. They're hearing voices. You will hear angels' voices, like, wasn't it the angel that told Joseph to take Mary and the baby and flee to Egypt and then told him when to come back? You will find there are no contradictions in dreams, because Joseph in Egypt interpreted a dream for the Pharaoh and was made second in command of the whole nation because of his ability to interpret dreams. So I don't see any contradiction at all in thinking of a world before or after. I see it as one world, one God. And we are just in first grade or kindergarten. And as we get older and study more and become wiser, we will understand a lot of things. It's not really a matter of focusing on a religion or a way of being or anything. It's a matter of being who you are so brilliantly that you feel at one with the universe. You feel safe. And yes, there will be problems, but you feel that the problems are not bigger than who you are. That when you feel sad, there are those who will comfort you, and they might be physically friends of yours, or they may have been loved ones who have gone on. There isn't really any major contradiction unless one wants to become very dogmatic and have this argument like, you know, my God is bigger than your God. My God can beat up your God. And then we get back to pre-kindergarten with that. But if we sit down and say, you know, this is so marvelous, this is so mysterious, this is so great, this is the greatest adventure ever, then you will find that one day we are communicating freely with our loved ones who are not physically here, and we are helping those who are here.
I think that's an outstanding answer, a lot better and clearer answer than I ever expected. I am sure that satisfies the curiosity of those Christians who may be listening and helps them to put this into proper perspective. So realizing that it's not that you're talking against that, you're talking about something that goes nicely with Christianity and I imagine many other religions. So thank you, John. I'm continuing to learn from you and to grow in my own knowledge. So thank you for sharing.
My pleasure, Steve.